I call the meeting of the Committee on Energy, Finance, and Policy to order. We have a quorum. Our first item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Sexton, have you taken a look at the minutes?
I have, Chair. So moved.
Right. Representative Sexton moves the minutes from March 11th, 2025. Are there any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. The minutes from March 11th are approved. Next on the agenda, we have House File 2002, Representative Igo. Representative Igo moves his bill. Would you want to move
it
for
us? Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion to move House File 2002 to the General Register.
All right. Representative Igo, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think before I get into talking about the bill, if I could, I would like to move my DE2 amendment.
All right. Representative Igo moves his DE2 amendment. Would you want to explain your amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the DE2 amendment that's in front of us today, members, is kind of the result of some work and collaboration with the Prairie Island Indian community. We wanted to make sure that as we talk about lifting the nuclear prohibition on our state, the nuclear moratorium, that we make sure every stakeholder is at the table. So in front of us today is placeholder language that I have worked on and came up with to kind of have a place inside that bill that Prairie Island is going to be able to work at in partnership with all of us as members of the legislative body. So the amendment in front of us would do two things. It would say that there'd be no new construction of nuclear facilities on Prairie Island, and there'd be no allowances for outside spent fuel to be stored at Nuclear Island. At Prairie Island. So these two items are added into the bill today in front of us in the DE as, again, placeholder language in works as continuing to partner with the community and with this legislative body to make sure we do this the right way. And with that, I would encourage and ask for your support.
Any questions for Representative Igo to get the DE2 put on his bill in the condition that he likes it? All right. All in favor of the Igo DE2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Your bill as amended. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So here we are. The bill is in front of us to lift the nuclear moratorium here in the state of Minnesota. This is an issue that is incredibly important to the future of not only just our state, but the nation as a whole. As we look to diversify our energy grid, as we look to ensure reliability, as we look to ensure affordability, it is important that we remember that baseload power is at the core of that. And one of the best forms of baseload power that we have available to us, not only in this state, but in this nation and this world, is nuclear power. You know, we had a presentation here for MISO just a few weeks back that talked about how the backbone of the MISO grid is the nuclear generation power plants. And here in Minnesota, we've had a moratorium that's prohibited even looking into and doing studies about if our IOUs and our communities want to host these types of facilities. Simply put, a moratorium around ideas, I think, is a very archaic way of legislating and policymaking. So today in the year 2025, we're going to say, nope, enough of that. We need to have open, good faith discussions and work through processes about bringing these things back online. I want to make it very clear. The bill in front of us today is not permitting a new nuclear power plant. This bill is not even choosing a community where one's going to be put. It's not giving the automatic approvals. It is just removing the moratorium around having the discussion about whether or not we can find a way to do these things and we can do them the right way. That's one thing we do in Minnesota very well. From all of our industries, we do them the right way and we've led on it. Minnesota has a history of leading in many different industries and has led in affordability and electricity. Now, as we look towards the future and some of the things that are laid out in front of us, it's important that we utilize every tool in the toolbox, that we pursue an all-of-the-above energy approach. And if we're going to get there and we're going to make sure to keep energy affordable and reliable, we need to use everything at our disposal. So the bill in front of us today adds one more tool to that toolbox, and that is nuclear power. It is not just a discussion that's happening here in this country, but globally. We're seeing countries around the world are looking at new ways of doing nuclear. It's almost weekly that you hear of a new type of technology that's being developed that's either going to be more efficient, more modular, smaller, or it's going to use new types of fuel. There's some reactors that are being designed that are even using spent fuel that we already have. Which is incredible about that, is we're using a waste product to create energy. Nuclear is a way for us to stabilize electrical demand while also providing incredible jobs and opportunities. Nuclear power is some of the best paying jobs in the electric field. It also comes with it thousands and tens of thousands of construction jobs that our men and women in labor help build. nuclear power plants are not only just jobs for our communities, they're tax base for our communities, and they're reliability for our communities. So today, I know we have a lot of testifiers and farmers that are going to talk about this, but this is a really exciting time for us as a state to take a stance and finally remove the fact that we are the only state in the nation that has a full-on moratorium on these types of power-producing plants, and it's time we remove ourselves from the map on that one and take a step in the right direction. So with that, I would love to go to our testifiers.
All right. Thank you, Representative Igo. We will move to our testimony. Blake Johnson from the Prairie Island Indian Community, if you want to come and to the testifiers table. Introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Blake Johnson. I'm the Government Relations Representative for the Prairie Island Indian Community. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before the committee today. First, I'd like to thank the author of the bill for the productive conversations we've had leading up to this hearing. We also appreciate the amendment that was added to the bill. My comments today will sound very similar to the comments I made when this bill was heard previously in this committee. Our reservation sits less than 700 yards from the plant and over 1,000 tons of nuclear waste generated from the Prairie Island nuclear plant. We are the closest community, native or non-native, in the nation to the nuclear plant and stored nuclear waste. As you recall from my previous testimony, both the nuclear plant and the waste were sited next to the tribe without our consultation or consent. When the plant was constructed in the early 1970s, Prairie Island had just received electricity and running water a couple years before. Then in the mid-1990s, when it became clear that there was nowhere for the spent nuclear waste to go, the PUC and legislature authorized the storage of the spent fuel next to our tribe, despite our opposition. The result, as we all know, was the spent nuclear fuel was simply put next to us. It is worth repeating, our tribal members have lived next to spent nuclear waste for 30 years and next to a nuclear generating plant for 50 years. There are several generations of tribal members who have never known their ancestral lands without either of those things. And there are still many tribal members who can recall the state forcing the waste on us but promising a moratorium on new nuclear until there's a solution to the waste issue. Again, we understand well that baseload energy is needed for the grid that's carbon-free, which is why eyes are set on nuclear. And again, we understand why the vast majority of the state has enjoyed an incredible amount of carbon-free baseload energy for the last 50 years, and the vast majority of the state has likely not noticed the cost, but we do. We've noticed the cost because it's awfully hard to ignore it. Last time we were here, we shared that we planned to have a community meeting to discuss this issue. This is how we do things from where we are from. And our decision isn't only about what is needed right now in the moment. Our community thinks about the impacts of our decisions on the next seven generations. And when you think in that way, your perspective does change. How will our future generations look back at the decisions we make? In our first meeting, our community members asked these questions. If there is still no solution for the waste, meaning it's still here in the ground and the federal government hasn't met its obligation, why should the moratorium be lifted? Doesn't the reason for the moratorium remain? We had a hard time answering these questions. What would you say if it were your people? What would you say if your people are struggling with what sits in the earth and adding more means that it will be a problem we leave for our children, our children's children, and so on? So today, while I would like to be able to report to you that our community has reached a conclusion on whether to change its long-held position of opposing the moratorium repeal, we are not yet there. Over the next few weeks, our members will be having another meeting, and we are providing opportunities for feedback. We again understand the importance and are committed to engaging productively on this important issue. But at this time, the Prairie Island Indian community remains opposed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, I'm really moved by your testimony and just want to say that we could all use the guidance that you're providing on thinking about the next seven generations. So thank you for being here and thank you for your testimony.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Chair.
Oh, Representative Carroll.
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Johnson. Oh, quick question.
You're not done yet. Sorry about that.
I saw you tried to sneak away. it should be an easy question for you. So have there been any adverse health consequences on your tribal members that you can attribute to the plant?
Mr. Johnson.
I don't, Mr. Chair and Representative, as it relates to studies and looking at that perspective, I don't have the answer to that. You know, we are a very small community, and the test sample of how that's done is usually based on higher number of applicants. So I can't really give you a definite answer on that. You know, our concern is always the health and safety of our people. And I think from my perspective, we were put on this land, on this trust land that is Prairie Island, and we don't have the capability of moving anywhere else if something were to happen. Our government and our operations and our people and our land goes away. So the importance of that perspective and just making sure the safety of our people is still there and that our capability to be a federally recognized tribe is still there if something were to happen.
Representative Carroll, follow-up?
No. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? If you do, we might bring it back up.
But all right.
Thank
Sounds
you.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. We have Rachel Stuckey with the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum. If you'd come to the table, introduce yourself. And folks, for the rest, if you could kind of keep it between 2 and 3 minutes in that range, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Szczesinski, and committee members. My name is Rachel Stuckey, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum, and we're also a member of the Minnesota Nuclear Energy Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today and to Representative Igo for his leadership on this critical issue affecting all Minnesotans. We appreciate his ongoing commitment and efforts to make this a bipartisan collaboration and to address the concerns of the Prairie Island Indian community. Achieving Minnesota's 100% carbon-free by 2040 mandate requires dependable baseload power sources. These sources must ensure both grid stability and energy security without compromising on consistent, uninterrupted power delivery. This remains non-negotiable for households and businesses across our state. MNCEF believes that while future innovations in baseload energy may eventually emerge, nuclear technology is already advancing with next-generation options that we cannot afford to ignore. Nuclear facilities maintain an impressive 92% capacity factor, offering nearly three times the dependability of wind generation and twice that of natural gas or coal plants. Nuclear already supplies a quarter of Minnesota's electricity through just two facilities, yet our state's moratorium prevents adoption of these advanced nuclear technologies. Lifting the moratorium would not fast-track development, but would remove an unnecessary barrier. It would allow for thoughtful, balanced energy policy while maintaining regulatory oversight. Importantly, each nuclear facility creates hundreds of high-paying jobs and generates millions in tax revenue for local communities. We urge the committee to support Minnesota's clean energy future by removing the outdated moratorium. And if we're truly committed to reaching our carbon-free goals while ensuring reliable and affordable power for all Minnesotans, we must take action now. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We have Michelle Benson from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Igo. My name is Michelle Benson. I'm Director of Energy Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 2002 that would allow permitting for nuclear power in Minnesota. The Chamber and our more than 6,300 employers from across the state believe in the triple goal of affordable, reliable, cleaner energy. Meeting all three parts of this goal is essential for Minnesota businesses to remain competitive regionally, nationally, and globally. As you've heard, demand for electricity in Minnesota will continue to grow. Policy and consumer decisions like the electrification of transportation, smart appliances, home automation, and a move to low-carbon heating and cooling sources like ground source heat pumps are organically shifting our daily lives to higher electric demand. Advancing technology, the demand for cloud computation, digital currencies, large language models all drive demand for electricity. The Chamber believes the expansion of nuclear power is a response to that demand. And it's not just here in the committee, in our state, where people are talking about expanding nuclear power. The International Energy Agency, Alphabet, the government of Sweden, the leaders of Dubai, the former governor of North Dakota, now head of the National Energy Council, within the last month, all made significant public policy statements about the necessity of nuclear power to drive our economic future. Minnesota would stand out in all the world for not looking forward to nuclear power. We appreciate Senator Igoe's commitment to a balanced approach to energy, his incorporation of considerations for Prairie Island. And with that, members, I want to say reliable energy is critical to Minnesota's economy. Outages pose enormous safety risks and operational disruption that will interfere with manufacturing and their decision to place their businesses here. Opening the door to 24/7 zero carbon electricity is a reasonable step for Minnesota. As innovation accelerates, electricity demand rises, we need to be part of the next wave of innovation. So thank you all for your careful consideration. I look forward to further conversations about how we can get this bill across the finish line this year. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Representative Igoe. Sorry.
Thank you for your testimony. We have Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kent Sulem, Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association, and I'm here to offer our strong support for House File 22. Why are small municipal utilities interested in this bill? Because we have upcoming mandates to be completely clean by 2040. And we need to have an all-of-the-above approach to know what options are getting worked in which communities. Our ability to work with our joint power agencies, collaborative efforts. We're not saying that we're going to be building a nuclear reactor. We may never get into nuclear power, but we need to be able to have the open discussion of what the options are, what the prices are going to be, what technology is coming. This bill does not, as was stated before, does not construct any new reactors. It doesn't guarantee anything. The very next section of the statute, if you look at what's being changed here, the very next section requires that placement of spent rods, spent fuel be considered before any other step of the plan could go forward. So all we're saying is let us have the meaningful conversations and dialogues as technology improves. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mary Haltvik with the Citizens Climate Lobby, Minnesota. You introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Igoe, good afternoon and thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of HF 2002. My name is Mary Haltvik and I'm here today speaking on behalf of Citizens Climate Lobby Minnesota. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that advocates for climate solutions. We have hundreds of volunteers across the state and are currently part of the Minnesota Nuclear Energy Alliance, advocating to lift the nuclear moratorium. In order to reduce carbon emissions at the speed and scale that is required to protect our planet and future generations, we need to consider all carbon-free technologies that can help move us quickly towards 100% clean energy. This includes nuclear energy. Climate impacts do not respect political or geographical borders. whether it's rising health care costs tied to air pollution, increased frequency of flooding, or longer lasting heat waves. All of our communities are impacted by climate change. As a nonpartisan group, we believe in holding conversations with everyone along the political spectrum and from all across the state with the aim of finding shared values, common ground, and ultimately solutions that will benefit us all. It's hard work, but we know it can be done. We want to particularly emphasize that we all need to learn. We all need to learn and listen closely and deeply to the Prairie Island and Indian community. They have a long history with nuclear energy and have important insights and concerns to share. Finally, nuclear energy is not an easy topic for many people, but we encourage everyone to become nuclear curious and to explore its potential to help us reach our clean energy goals. Like my fellow CCL volunteers, I enjoy Minnesota's four seasons and natural beauty. Whether I'm enjoying the outdoors with my family on the Iron Range, where I was born and raised, or enjoying our parks and trails in the Twin Cities, where I now live. Please take action today so future generations can continue to enjoy our beautiful state. It's time to lift the moratorium and let nuclear energy be an option. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on deck is Andrew Campeau with the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. Could you introduce yourself for the committee?
Thank you, Chair, and members of the Energy Finance Policy Committee. My name is Andrew Campeau, President of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association, representing over 9,000 skilled trades professionals in the fields of plumbing, pipe fitting, gas fitting, sprinkler fitting, and HVACR service. I'm here today to offer our support for HF 2002. I would like to start off by thanking Representative Igo for authoring this bill. My union supports this bill for one reason: work for our members. We recognize that as a society, we are gravitating towards cleaner energy sources. Our members embrace this transition and are training for new technologies that exist or we see coming within the energy industry. We also believe that nuclear, as part of an all-of-the-above energy plan, needs to be a part of this discussion and plan for a cleaner energy future. Our members that perform work in the nuclear sector enjoy good-paying, family-sustaining jobs with top-tier benefits that the industry creates. Through our registered apprenticeship programs and continuing education, our members carry the skills to perform this work in the safest manner with the highest degree of precision and skill that the nuclear industry demands. We stand proudly with legislators such as Representative Igo in embracing this approach to energy and are happy to support HF 2002. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Campeau. Just a question. You had a long list of the things that your members work on. Do you also work on ground source geothermal or advanced geothermal, anything like that?
Absolutely, we do. Representative. Absolutely, we do. As I stated, we are embracing greener technology and ground source heat pumps, as well as geothermal technology, and thermal energy network systems are part of what we're training for. Our Union Hall and Training Center, St. Paul Pipefitters Local 455, had the first of its kind in the nation geothermal system that they partnered with Darcy Systems installed, and our members did perform that work, and they continue. I would like to extend an invite to you, Representative, or any of the representatives on this committee to come for a tour of that facility anytime. We would love to showcase that.
Representative Jones, follow up.
Thank you very much. I'd love to come on that tour.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the invitation. I have already been twice to see it, and I'm a big fan of the technology that Darcy Solutions implements, so thank you.
All right. Thank you. Joel Johnson with the IBEW.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the IBEW State Council, which represents over 15,000 electrical workers from around the state, including thousands who have safely worked at the Monticello and Prairie Island nuclear plants for the past 50 years. These are great jobs with great pay and benefits and meaningful work. Representative Igo, thank you again for introducing this bill. The IBEW agrees that it's long past time to allow utilities to consider a nuclear power plant when they need to build new generation. It's widely accepted that demand for electricity is going to skyrocket in the coming years, and that the electrical grid will be one of the primary drivers of our economy. It's important that we get this right. Lifting the nuclear moratorium isn't a guarantee that a nuclear power plant will be built in the state. It only means that a utility can consider building a nuclear power facility as it continues to move towards it, our carbon-free standards. It only means that the PUC can consider nuclear power and determine if it's in the interest of the state's residents to build one. There is some urgency to this, too. Planning for a new traditional plant, working through environmental issues and review, siting, arranging for financing and construction can take years for a conventional power plant. For a nuclear power plant, it takes considerably longer. So I urge you to vote to lift the moratorium. This is an important issue and one we don't have time to ignore. Thank you again, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for your testimony. We have Mark Tamir, the Midwest Reliability Organization.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mark T. Meyer. I am Director of Power System Risk Management at the Midwest Reliability Organization. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today on this important topic. The Midwest Reliability Organization, or MRO, is one of six regional entities operating under the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC. And we are here to protect and enhance the reliability of the bulk power system in North America. MRO is an independent, objective, regulatory agency based right here in St. Paul, and our focus is on reliability for Minnesota as well as across our footprint. We are here to make sure the lights stay on. And while energy policy should appropriately prioritize bulk power system reliability, my statements today are not intended and should not be interpreted as advocating for a specific resource, but rather consideration of a diverse set of resources. Diversity is the friend of reliability. Industry assessments have shown one of the most critical challenges we face is whether there will be sufficient energy supply to meet the increases in demand for existing and new uses of electricity, which are vital to our economy, our national security, as well as our quality of life. I'm here to advocate for reliability, which is enhanced by unfettered access to all potential resources, including baseload, dispatchable resources like nuclear, to meet reliability challenges. Removing the barrier to new nuclear plants allows consideration of all sources of electric power for the stable and reliable operation of the bulk power system. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Derek Moe with the Minnesota Rural Electric Association.
Thank you, Chair Swodzinski. I'm Derek Moe, CEO of the Minnesota Rural Electric Association, and thank you, Representative Igo, for your longstanding leadership on this important issue. I am pleased to testify as a member of the Minnesota Nuclear Energy Alliance, a broad coalition of stakeholders formed this legislative session for the sole purpose of lifting the state's nuclear moratorium. We are 35 member organizations at this point and growing. The state's utilities are members with the belief that we need nuclear energy as a tool to keep the power grid reliable and energy rates affordable into the future. Labor groups you've heard from and are represented, understanding that jobs in the nuclear energy sector provide families with strong wages and workers with safe and fulfilling careers. heard from environmental groups, which are included in the coalition, knowing that to meet the state's carbon-free goals, we must grow the state's access to carbon-free energy alternatives that can be available at all times and under all conditions. MREA represents the state's electric cooperatives, serving 85% of the state's land mass and about a third of the state's population. And we believe that now is the time to lift the moratorium. Nuclear energy accounts for about half of all carbon-free energy produced in Minnesota, but this percentage will diminish even if those existing plants continue to operate indefinitely. We are entering a time of rapid load growth driven by data centers, EVs, and a desire to electrify the economy to accelerate decarbonization. The organizations responsible for keeping the power grid reliable are already warning that a lack of sufficient, always available resources to ensure reliability in all weather conditions ought to be our concern. 84% of all energy added to the power grid in 2024 was solar. There will continue to be big increases in wind and solar generation. But any belief that we can reliably run the grid in all conditions with only wind and solar and some storage is a dangerous belief. We can meet tomorrow's challenges of electricity growth while decarbonizing and growing Minnesota's economy and keep electricity reliable. But to accomplish all this requires energy policy that allows the balancing of all these goals and the consideration of nuclear energy as one of the options on the table. Allow Minnesotans to join the research community exploring new opportunities in this field, to grow careers that provide for families. Lift the moratorium to embrace the budding nuclear energy renaissance in this field. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you, Mr. Moe. And the next few testifiers are going to be via Zoom. And so with that, Patrick White with the Nuclear Innovation Alliance. If you want to make sure you're unmuted, and thank you. And just introduce yourself for your testimony.
Great, thank you so much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Patrick White, and I'm the research director at the Nuclear Innovation Alliance, an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank focused on creating the conditions for success for advanced nuclear energy as a climate solution. I have a master's and a PhD in nuclear science and engineering with a focus on the safety, licensing, and design of nuclear power plants. I appreciate the opportunity to provide comments on this bill. At the Nuclear Innovation Alliance, we're solely focused on how nuclear energy can help us meet our national and global need for affordable, reliable, secure, and clean energy. As Minnesota seeks to meet the state's clean energy goals, we believe that new nuclear energy can help complement existing nuclear, solar energy, wind energy, hydroelectric, geothermal, energy storage, and all other clean energy technologies to help provide the affordable, reliable, and clean power that the state needs. NIA also believes that state-level actions on new nuclear power plants are going to be critical to really creating both the commercial and the social conditions for success to see the deployment of new nuclear power plants as part of our climate solution. I think it's really important to remember that lifting this moratorium doesn't commit Minnesota to building any new nuclear reactors, but gives the state the opportunity to learn more about the role that nuclear energy can play in meeting Minnesota's energy needs and consider future commercial new nuclear power plants. I believe it's also important to remember that lifting the moratorium doesn't and shouldn't reduce opportunities or limit the need for public engagement as we discuss deployment of new nuclear technologies. We must remember the importance of obtaining the consent of counties, cities, and tribal nations in Minnesota as we talk about all new nuclear energy projects, or all new energy projects, including nuclear energy. In particular, we feel it's important that the Prairie Island Indian community continues to have a voice in discussions about nuclear energy in Minnesota moving forward, given their experience with the technology. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to remain online to answer any questions from the committee.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Tom Thompson with the Sierra Club. If you want to unmute yourself and introduce yourself to the committee.
Okay. Chair Zinski and Representative Igo and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Thompson. I am the co-chair of the Sierra Club North Star chapter. Our chapter represents 50,000 members and supporters across Minnesota, working to help our state's communities flourish through environmental protection, and we appreciate the opportunity to speak in opposition to House File 2002. The Sierra Club strongly opposes lifting the moratorium on nuclear plants in Minnesota. One of our top concerns is safety. Our two nuclear plants are located on the banks of the Mississippi, where an accident would harm local communities and millions downstream. Besides reactor safety, the required long-term storage of high-level waste, for which there is still no viable solution, makes nuclear a uniquely dangerous energy technology. It is an environmental justice issue, causing radioactive contamination throughout its life cycle, especially for low-income and indigenous communities living near uranium mines, mills, plants, and storage facilities. On this topic, we urge you to listen and hear the concerns of the Prairie Island Indian community. Another problem is the cost, which continues to increase. Every dollar spent on nuclear is one less dollar that can be spent on wind, solar storage, energy efficiency, and grid modernization, which create many more jobs per dollar invested. Finally, we must consider impacts on Minnesota's unique groundwater resources and the community depend on them. In closing, nuclear power is controversial for good reasons, and much better solutions exist for our power needs. Having the moratorium in place does not mean we cannot talk about nuclear, but we first need to address the risks and concerns. We urge you to stay Minnesota's course and commitment to truly clean, renewable energy and vote no on this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. White, or Mr. Thompson, for your testimony. Is there any questions for the Zoom Representative Sexton?
Thank you, Chair Swinsky. As you know, I used to teach a course called Energy and National Security at the Army War College. It was a master's level course. And at that time, it was back around 2011, the National Sierra Club was very supportive of nuclear as opposed to anything that produced greenhouse gas effects and understood that we need baseload electrical generation. So it appears the North Star group is a little bit different than the national group as far as the Sierra Club. All right. Just an observation.
Representative or Mr. Thompson, I don't know if
I'd like to disagree with that.
Go ahead, Mr. Thompson.
I'd like to disagree with that in that I've been a member since 1983. And I do not remember any time in which the Sierra Club has endorsed nuclear energy. There have been groups within the Sierra Club that has, but I don't believe that the Sierra Club itself has had a commitment to a moratorium for some time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Representative Sexton?
I'll attempt to fund YouTube over the weekend.
All right. There we go. All right. Is there any members of the public that didn't have a chance to register or would like to give any testimony today? All right. Member discussion. Are there any questions for Representative Igo? Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess, to be clear, I'm what somebody called nuclear curious. So I don't know where I'm coming on this exactly, and I've had concerns, and I've talked to some of my stakeholders about those concerns, or some of my constituents about it, and where I'm kind of at and the things I want to do, want to address. But I wanted to thank you for working with the Prairie Island community. That is really important to me. But I also want to recognize that it doesn't quite address my total concerns, because my concerns around this are the fact that we put our trash, and it is nuclear waste, it is trash, it is old electronics, all of it. We always end up putting it in the communities that are most vulnerable and are historically disadvantaged. And so that expands way beyond just Prairie Island, right? Like, if you come to me and you say you're going to do it in White Earth, I'm going to have problems too, or in North Minneapolis, right? And so I think that it needs to be a broader conversation about protecting vulnerable communities. And I wanted to point that out here. And I don't know if you have thoughts on that. I'm going to pause and let you respond.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hollins, for the question and comment. Really, I mean, no, this is a huge problem, right? I mean, and it applies, like you said, larger than just nuclear, too. I mean, there's things all across the state, you know, and we've seen in our past and our nation's past. One of the things as it pertains to nuclear waste and why lifting the moratorium is so important is the federal government actually has billions of dollars set aside to work on creating storage hubs. And that would help solve one of the largest problems we have here in Minnesota, which is storage of spent fuel. But we aren't going to be able to raise our hand and go after that funding to help build the facility if we have a moratorium in place. We're going to be deemed as if there's going to be no need for us to have it, the federal government will look at states that are more open to nuclear. So it is something that I am concerned with. And I think part of my opening testimony was talking about how spent fuel is actually becoming fuel itself. So it's really going to be important that as we look towards the future, we make sure to have good, safe storage facilities that are equitable and keep communities safe and keep that resource, because we're probably going to be using it for decades, if not centuries, to come.
All right, Representative Hollins.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Representative Igo. And then the other question that I have, and maybe this is more philosophical in nature, I'm hearing a lot of people say, we can't even consider nuclear. We can't talk about nuclear because of this moratorium. I mean, I can consider murdering somebody, even though we have a bill that says you can't murder somebody. And so I'm going to push back on that a little bit and say, you can consider things. You can make plans for things. You might not be able to invest in it. But what I really want to see out of the community that's pushing for nuclear is a plan on what to do with that waste, a plan on how we're going to protect people, a plan on the safety considerations, and a plan on the cost. So would you please address that?
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hollins. So I think the way to look at this is that you're right. Someone probably could go look into it and spend tens of thousands of millions of dollars looking into the plan, but what's the point if there's no way to really ever bring that to fruition? What company, what business, we talk about it as the state level. Why would we invest something if there's nothing to be returnable at the end? It would be you could invest and not do anything. You'd still have to come to this legislature and say we need the moratorium lifted because we've spent $50 million figuring out a plan, but the plan can't go anywhere. They can't go to the PUC for approval. They can't go anywhere. And these larger groups, right, when you're talking about stakeholders or you're talking about rural electric cooperatives where we're all members, what member is going to want to see their dollars going into something that isn't could never be brought to fruition under state law?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. And I respect that. But also I'll say there are thousands and thousands of dollars worth of people coming here and testifying and helping support this and helping draft bills around it. And so their money of rural electric folks and others, right, are going to support something that if there was a plan in place, you'd have my vote. And then there wouldn't be a moratorium. So it's like a little bit of a chicken and egg situation that I'm kind of frustrated with. And I see what you're saying here, but also I think that, it's important for us to recognize that every time that somebody takes the time to come from Greater Minnesota to the Capitol to speak, to do research on why this is important to their constituents or their groups of people, that costs money too. And so I want to get there. I want to get there with you, okay? But I need you to help me help you.
Representative Hollins, was that more of a statement?
I guess.
All right, sounds good. All right, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Igo. I have a few comments and maybe a question within it too. So I did want to talk about, there was some discussion a while ago about if the Prairie Island community had experienced any physical health issues. And I think the response was unclear at this point. But that is one angle. The other would be from a mental health perspective. I think we all have to realize if you live that close to a nuclear facility and you're within an 8-minute walk of this nuclear waste, there are likely some mental health things that you may internalize. So I think we should realize that. I am absolutely nuclear curious. And I think some of the things going on are quite interesting. I do think we have a very unique situation here in Minnesota. And Mr. Johnson's comment of talking to the young people in his community based on the promises that were given to them and the question of doesn't the reason for the moratorium still exist? Based on the things that were said at the time, I think the answer would have to be yes. So I think we have to go very carefully, and I'm glad you're engaged with that community. But that's a really key thing based on commitments or discussions had in the past. I want to do a little bit of a reality check on nuclear. As I said, I'm very nuclear curious, and I'm open to it. And here's my question. Isn't there a lot of research on nuclear modular reactors, other things going on right now in other states that maybe don't have the same kind of historical situation that we do in other states and around the world?
Representative Igo.
Well, I think there's research going on any given topic besides nuclear that happens, whether it's neighboring states, whether it's around the world. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that is kind of my point. On nuclear, regardless of what we do on this, Minnesota isn't going to be a first actor on this, right? We're going to be learning from things that happen in other places. We're going to be a follower on new modular, new things. That's with our history. That's where we're going to be. There is some other kind of reality checks I want to make. So there was discussion about we need future innovations in baseload and comparing that against nuclear. Well, we need future innovations in nuclear as well, certainly in terms of cost and the time it takes to develop them. So I don't see like the scales are different. I think the scales are equal at least. We talk about demand is going to skyrocket in the coming years. Absolutely. And even if we were to start now and try to build a nuclear plant for a state that didn't have the situation that we're in, it would take 15 years at a minimum, really. We're going to have to solve this problem of demand skyrocketing well before any nuclear could help us here. We're going to have to solve it. So next point, we need this to keep energy rates affordable. Well, if you look at any of the recent nuclear developments, it's not affordable, right? I mean, anything but. Look at what's happened in Georgia. So I think that also is questionable. There was a comment that only wind and solar and relying on only wind and solar and storage is dangerous or something like that. Based on the technologies we have today, yes. But in 15 to 20 years, there's all kinds of research happening on storage, long-term storage, maybe using hydrogen. There's many different things there that we can wind up in that are at least as likely to provide the answer that we are going to need as nuclear. It is also kind of, and that ties into no other options. Some of them may be enhanced geothermal, battery technology, so many different things. So I want to say I am very interested in nuclear, but I think we have a unique situation here. And in spite of, and I really appreciate the things that other folks have said, many of whom I agree with on many things, and I agree with them on interest in nuclear. I don't agree on the urgency that it has to be right now and it has to be this year, especially given where we have come from and our situation in Minnesota.
Representative Jones.
Mr. Chair, if I could, there's kind of some questions.
Representative Igo.
To respond to. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft. To kind of sum up everything you said there, you know, one of the lines that stuck out to me was, you know, Minnesota maybe needs to be more of a follower on this issue. And I think that based on Minnesota's history, what we do best at is being a leader. And I would like to see this state lead and continue to be a leader, be that North Star state. So why wouldn't we lift this moratorium here this session and give Minnesota the chance to lead on nuclear and start collaborating with other countries and other states around us, right? To realize that if we want to bring the affordability of nuclear down, that means we need to keep working at designing them and building them and making collaborations with other states and countries. And, you know, when we talk about technology just getting better and better, you're right, right? I mean, but also it's worth noting that the nuclear that's being built in Georgia, the second one came online 33% lower cost, because they did it better after they built the second one. And it's only getting better and better and better. So I think for us to stand back and say, let's be a follower, is a wrong task. And I think we should challenge ourselves that Minnesotans as a whole want to lead. And leading means lifting this moratorium today.
Representative Kraft, you look like you'd like to ask another. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Igo, really appreciate your comments. I love Minnesota as a leader. The second Georgia plant still was something like $16 or $17 billion, so ways to go.
All right. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Igo. I, similarly to my colleagues, I am nuclear curious, very much so. And a couple of the things that you've mentioned here today, I agree with. You know, baseload power is very important. It's also we are expecting our demand to grow. All of these types of things. I also agree technology is getting better, not only on this, but I also want to note, you know, on advanced geothermal, I mean, I think that's something that we should be exploring. I think it's probably on similar timelines, but maybe even we don't actually know if the costs are going to be same or as nuclear or lower. But I think there are some other technologies that we should be looking at as fervently. The Fervo Energy organization just opened up a commercial size plant, and I believe it was Utah. So wanted to note that. The other thing was I really appreciate the notion of like Minnesota being a leader. I think there's lots of benefits to that. And I think kind of what it was alluded to is that being a leader also does come with risks. Being the first one out there means that we're the guinea pig. And so that's where that kind of cost concern comes out. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily bad, but that's really like there's just things to weigh there. But lastly, I think similar to folks on my side, just getting more information that is kind of information that we can all trust, like having a study. I think there was a study maybe proposed last year. I wasn't here, so I don't know many of the details about it. But that's something I would be really interested in that that maybe we could pursue as a body that could maybe get more support from our side.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones. You know, studies have been talked about in the past, but again, this stuff is just happening in other states, right? I mean, Georgia's facilities have just started recently coming online in the last couple of years. I mean, there is new nuclear being built in this country. There's new nuclear being built in other countries outside of us. We're already going to be a follower when we jump to the front and want to lead in the Midwest. There's other states around us starting to do this work. I mean, it's time for us to really make that stance and go towards this thing because, again, and I think we all agree at this, we're at a time where demand is increasing just as much as supply is, but we're not building enough supply out to be able to go along with our demand needs. And the baseload is where it gets. You know, one of the most important parts of energy policy, in my opinion, is we spent the last 100 years in this country as a whole doing everything we could to lower the cost of power. Because when we lower the cost of power, we put more money in people's pocket and we lift them out of poverty, right? And right now we're at a time where energy rates, not just here in Minnesota, but all around the country are rising. And it's hurting everyday Minnesotans, and it's hurting Americans. So that's why policies like this, lifting this moratorium, give our producers the authority to start looking into seeing if they can get back to reducing that cost of power and putting more money in people's pocket and giving them that safety and that security to know that they have safe baseload power and they can continue to develop into this electrical economy that we're going to have.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Igo. I think you're kind of getting at to the point where I'm looking for more information. It's really around that cost piece. Like, what could the cost be here in Minnesota? And because I think there are real risks, as we've heard, especially if you're leading in this, and the billions of dollars that it takes to stand up one of these power plants. That's really where the concern comes from.
All right. Representative Igo?
Yep. Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, I mean, that's what lifting the moratorium would do, though, is we'd discover that cost. It would give our IOUs, our munis, our co-ops the ability to come together and start doing planning, whether it's, you know, and then if they have proposals, start working with our permitting agencies, start working with the PUC. We would discover that as a state working forward. But no one's going to do that until a moratorium is lifted because they can't do that under state law.
All right. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to thank Chair Igo for bringing this forward. I know we've had a lot of conversation about this. I think one of the things that I wanted to point out to our DFL nuclear curious folks that have mentioned that, and I understand that. There's a history with nuclear that should make us all sort of like pay attention. I was able to go to Idaho Falls and look at the Department of Energy and see what they're doing with some amazing technology with these micro reactors. It's amazing, and if you're curious about this, please find a way to go see it yourself. I think what I want to just make a comment here, too, is a couple things. On Tuesday, Representative Hollins was very clear about she did not worry what North Dakota was doing and how it affected our carbon-free mandates because of the lawsuit, the potential of a lawsuit. She didn't care what they're doing because that's not what she's here to do. But if you want to have a 2040 mandate, folks, we better start looking at all the options at the table. We have to consider that. If you want one thing, you have to get all the tools on the table. So her comment on Tuesday stuck with me because she should care. We all should care. If we really want to get serious about hitting that without affecting our costs to our customers with the reliability, the cost of energy, we have to make sure that the moratorium, and it's such a heavy word, I just want to wish you could say, can we start the conversation? You know, there's a long, long ways of getting to an actual turning a switch on that's powered by new nuclear, because it does take, it takes decades to get something up and running. But we need to be able to be strong enough to say, I think we're at a place now with technology, with what our current mandates are in the state of Minnesota. Chair Igo is a fantastic champion to make sure that the voices that need to be here are being heard. Your amendment today said that very strongly with the Prairie Island community. And again, I've said that before, we really care what they think. And I know that they're also really in a tough spot too, and for obvious reasons. But we have to care about all the tools that we are allowing our developers and our future providers of potential nuclear. They have to know that we're serious about having the conversation so investments can be made in those future developments. So again, we've got to get serious about this. We can keep pushing it back and saying we're curious and yeah, well, we'll just keep waiting. Well, waiting in time is going to run out when we really need it in 2040. And if we don't have baseload clean 100% carbon power, I think nuclear is going to be a big, big part of our way of getting there. So I just want to say thank you, Chair Igo, for bringing this forward. You're really doing a good job in trying to check all the boxes to make sure that we're there. This is the year to turn on the switch of having the conversation. Thank you.
All right. Representative Weiner.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Igo, and listening to the comments and the conversation. I was considering a few things. You mentioned briefly about what's happening at the global level, and I think that's very critical to look at here, because if I recall correctly, according to COP 28 plan, which was signed in 2024, I believe, that has a goal of expanding the nuclear globally, triple it actually, by 2050. That's the plan. Our U.S. Department of Energy said that we're going to triple, globally, we're going to triple this because the need is there. So when I hear the conversations about the moratorium and nuclear curious, I have to chuckle a little bit because I think about conversations that happened 150 years ago when a new technology was coming across the United States, and that was railroads. There were groups, citizens, municipalities that did not want that new technology and said, we do not want your railroad coming through our area. And they dug in their heels. There's two small towns in my area. One of them said, we do not want your railroad. We want nothing to do with it. You go around us. And the other one said, we're going to pick up our town and we're going to move it 5 miles to be next to the railroad. The one that moved their town next to the railroad is still there. The one that didn't want the railroad is gone. That technology is changing. When the World Bank, China, and so many of these others are leading the way on nuclear, we're going to get left behind. We're going to get left in the dust. And like that small town in my area that no longer exists, that's what we end up having. That's what we're risking. And that's what we're risking by not lifting the moratorium in Minnesota. So thank you, Representative Igo.
Anyone else? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative, for the bill. I do believe nuclear needs to play a future in our role in carbon-free. My son
used to work at the farm in Monticello. He worked in Monticello with Coriata.
Sorry. Thanks again, Mr. Chair. And I too agree that this bill is needed. We need to look at nuclear in the future to continue our state on its path of carbon-free electricity. I was trying to say my son used to work at the plant at Monticello. He worked at Prairie Island. He worked at a plant in Michigan. And we spent a lot of time talking about the operation of nuclear plants. And I was amazed. They have backups to the backups to the backups at these plants. They're extremely safe operating. And we just check the safety record of nuclear plants in this country. It's just amazing. And I agree that the spent fuel is an issue. And it seems to me, I recall he told me that when they change rods, there's like 90% of the power left in those rods when they take them out and refuel. But it's just an amazing technology. And I've been around here for a while, many years, and you know, every year it seemed like this issue comes up, lift the moratorium or not lift the moratorium. And you know, you say on the other side that, well, we can talk about it. Yeah, we can talk about it, but I was thinking if I could compare it to, if I wanted to try to power my four-wheel drive tractor with hydrogen, for example, but it was against the law to do that, just hypothetically, why would I talk about it or do it? There's got to be kind of an end game here to look at doing something when the law here says that you can't have a permit, you can't build one. So again, why do it? And my last comment, Representative Kraft, I agree with things you said. Nuclear is a kind of a long-range solution. And I think I caught what you said. You know, talk about solar and wind and storage being, you know, the solution in 2040. And you said, I think, something like, I think the technology will be there. And I thought was, well, it better be there because we're going on the path of that's going to be what we have. And, you know, I think in your bill there are off-ramps included in the case we evidently don't get there. So, yeah, I agree the goal is lofty. But, again, we've heard the talk about, you know, looking at other sources of baseload power. And I think this is one we need to look at, need to be able to talk about and talk about the future of it. So, again, thanks for the bill, Representative Igoe, and I fully support it.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify what I had said before was just that there are multiple options for 15, 20 years out. Storage certainly could be one of them, innovations there. We could have innovations in nuclear that are necessary. We could have innovations in enhanced geothermal. We could have innovations in hydrogen. My point is not that storage is going to solve it, is that there are multiple choices to solve it. Thanks.
All right. Co-Chair Eric Acob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have some comments, and I'm going to start with one of the first comments that Representative Igoe made when he introduced his bill today, and that was, we need to do this the right way, or we need to do things the right way in Minnesota. And our first testifier, Mr. Johnson, said there's still no solution for the waste. And so for us to be doing this without having a solution for the waste that's putting the cart before the horse. I don't know that that's doing it the right way. In fact, I would say it's not doing it the right way. I think that we need to be looking at this technology and the risks and impacts that it has on our communities all across the state before we can, in good conscience, go down this road. I think that when we heard a lot of people talk about nuclear being clean energy. And I think, let's be clear, it's carbon-free. It's not clean. It comes with waste. And that waste needs to be stored somewhere. And that poses risks to people and public health in our community and our environment. And so I think that we need to look at the whole picture. And included in that is the cost. And the cost to ratepayers, as we hear from testifiers often in this committee, about affordable, reliable, and cleaner. I think those are all really important. And nuclear is incredibly expensive. As Representative Kraft just pointed out, how long it takes to build a nuclear plant, 2040 will be here by the time we get a plant built. And we have XL Energy saying that they're going to meet their goals or the 2040 goals early, and that doesn't include building a new nuclear plant to achieve that. And so I think that as all of us, I am laser focused on carbon-free technology and how we can utilize that in Minnesota to prevent the worst impacts of climate change. 100% invested in that solution. And in all of those technologies that we look to accomplish those goals, we need to look at the risks that come with them and address them before we recklessly go and deploy and potentially harm communities. And so I appreciate that this has been a conversation that has continued throughout this session, and our session isn't done yet. So this conversation will continue, and I'm confident of that, and I'm open to that conversation. I think that as we do that, let's look at the risks. Let's look at the storage and the waste and where that's going to go. And I appreciate the amendment that was offered today about it not being at Prairie Island. And so if not there, then where? And what community is that going to put at risk? And so I think these are big conversations and big topics. And so I appreciate that we're having them here in our committee, and we'll continue to have them. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the opportunity to provide some comments today. Thank you.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. You know, and I couldn't have said it better than Representative Akam. My biggest concern about this is the safety aspect of it, and that once it's there for at least the rest of our lives, as well as our children and everything. You know, when you talk about developments and all that and small scale modular things, I get the impression that you're making it akin to like handheld nuclear, that it's somehow safer to have a small-scale modular. So I just remain concerned about the safety aspect of it, and until and unless that's addressed, I have serious concerns. Thank you.
All right, Representative Igo, any final comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. First, I just want to thank a lot of people today. So the members itself, we had a great discussion today, so thank you for that. Thank you to Prairie Island. It's been great having the conversations we have, and I look forward to continuing having more. It's been great being able to learn more about your community and learning about these concerns, and I stand committed to partnering with you on this issue and further issues. I also want to thank the coalition and the many different stakeholders that have came together on this issue. I mean, I think let's take a second here as members to realize that seeing a coalition of this size of different backgrounds doesn't happen every day in Minnesota. And when you see this many types of people and groups, I mean, from counties, from nonprofits, from business groups, coming together and saying it's time to do this, and they're coming together on a one united front, that's something legislators should pause and really take a time to listen to. So thank you to them. To get back to what the bill is doing at a whole today, you know, there's a lot of conversation we had around cost. There's a lot of conversation around concern. There's a lot of conversation around how would it would happen. Members, all of those questions would be answered in a process of actually wanting to permit and build a new facility. All of those questions. And you're talking to a guy that knows a lot about it. I'm from the range. I deal with permitting stuff all the time from a slew of different things, whether it's a board facility, whether it's a new mine, whether it's a copper nickel mine. I've been dealing with the permitting process my entire life. And you find out the good things, you find out the bad things, you find what you got to fix, you find what isn't going to work, what is going to work. This bill today in front of us brings back that ability to have that conversation, to work on that, to partner with communities, see who wants to raise their hand and actually be a part of maybe a potential nuclear facility, see who's against it, find out who the stakeholders would be, work the issue. But right now we can't work an issue because there's a moratorium. And again, I think, you know, Chair Baker, you said it best when you're talking about moratorium. I mean, what an archaic word to be using in 2025. You know, we're talking about how much policy we're moving and how many dynamic things the state's trying to do, how dynamic all of us are as members and our communities are, yet we have a moratorium? That's not right. That doesn't serve Minnesotans. That isn't looking out at the future. That's not being a leader. So I really just want to emphasize, again, this is an issue that we can really unite behind. Again, once this is a way for us to get to 2040. This isn't a red or a blue issue. In fact, many of the states that are leading on this way are either blue, purple, red. I mean, some of the countries that are leading on this are politically way different than anything we have here in the United States. It's not a political issue. And that's why when you poll nuclear and you talk about it, I think, outside of these chambers, and you talk to the average everyday person, they're like, oh, yeah, whatever happened with that nuclear power? I don't know. That seems to be my reaction. I definitely hear about it from my friends and colleagues around the country. Why aren't we talking about it? Why aren't we doing anything about it? Because it could be a long-term solution. And one of the biggest things I want to make sure to mention today is that as we continue to electrify and as the need for carbon-free power increases, let's do the most to make Minnesota as competitive as possible at that. And having baseload nuclear is a way to do that. There's companies around the country and companies around the world that have access to nuclear power, and if it was right here and they could get at it, because all of our nuclear power is basically spoken for right here in Minnesota right now, if they could get at it, we're not talking tens of millions of dollars of investment. We're talking billions of investment. That's thousands of hours of construction jobs. That's millions of dollars in tax base for our schools, our cities, our counties. I mean, all of our members in here are hearing about rising property taxes in all of our districts. These kind of facilities that lead to the spin-off industries that invest in them create the sort of stability that Minnesota needs to prosper. It diversifies our economy, all while making us that leader that we need to be. So members, I'd really encourage a green vote today. Let's move this bill, and let's take a stance and show that Minnesota is ready to be a leader on this thing. Let's put our people to work, let's bring everyone together, and let's really bring back nuclear power and the conversation to be had here in Minnesota. Thank you.
All right. Well, Representative Igo renews his motion that House File 2002, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill, as amended, is on its way to the General Register. All right. Well, members, we have a new, kinder, gentler legislature coming before us. We'll be splitting things right down the middle, just like every single issue that we'll be tackling, right down the middle. And with that, I just want to, co-chair Akam will be handling the duties of the gavel next Tuesday. And would you like to say anything, Representative? Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kindler and gentler. I like that. It will be a new opportunity for our committee, and I think it really is a great opportunity. I think that we are going to work very well together and work towards coming up with a budget and pass some bills for Minnesota. And so on Tuesday of next week, we have already posted four DFL bills. I guess it'll be the first DFL bills heard in committee this year. Representative Kraft is going to be talking about Energy Alley. Representative Hollins is going to be talking about some great geothermal bills. And Representative Mahmoud is going to be talking about a geothermal grant bill as well. So it'll be a good conversation on Tuesday. We look forward to seeing you all then. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. This meeting is adjourned.